Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok for another edition of Star Wars Rank, meaning a guest ranking things in Star Wars. And today we are going to get personal. And to do that, to take that personal journey with me today is Joseph Scrimshaw. Hello, sir.
Hello, I'm very excited to get personal. I love the way you introduce that because a lot of our episodes are personal, but this one is even more personal.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, 100%. We definitely share a lot of our personalities, lives, and our loves of Star Wars. But this one is a list today that is going to go into the depths of our memories of our Star Wars fandom, past, present, and, not yet future. To show today, the Star Wars rank list we got for you is the happiest Star Wars moments in real life. Recently, we ranked the happiest Star Wars moments in Star Wars, the moments on film or in the stories, in the books, in the TV shows that are really happy. And out of that conversation, you and I were talking about, well, what about us as fans? And people have been talking about Star Wars for a few years now on podcasts and shows, and there's got to be a lot of things that are make us happy as Star Wars fans. We love to celebrate the greatest saga ever told here, which doesn't mean we don't look at it with a critical eye or question things and look deeper at things, but also we come from this point of we are fans and we are moved by it. We're inspired by it. We are connected to Star Wars in so many levels and have been for so long in our lives. So, Joseph, we decided to open up those memory banks like we're a wizard in Harry Potter pulling it out of our head with a wand. I don't know the spell for that. I've seen it happen on a movie. We've captured these memories. I'm going to share it with everyone here today.
Yes, I put it in the podcast pen sieve. Yeah, I think that's right. Anyway, yeah, this is so great because I really enjoyed doing the happiest moments in the story of Star Wars and really kind of having a realization as we're going through the moments that so many of those moments in the story were about a character really getting something that they needed or they wanted or finding a moment of relief or catharsis. I'm really curious to see what all is going to tie together, what makes our fandom moments so happy.
Yeah, absolutely. So we went back, like I said, in the memory banks, but it was harder. We always say harder to find, to narrow down our list when we talk about other things. Initially, I don't know about you, Joseph, just setting it up a little bit here. I found it like kind of hard to pick a memory because, a lot of them were like last couple of years or things I experienced here. And it's like, no, I needed to really force myself to go back my entire career, so to speak, of a fan.
Yeah, no, I have. I think because we talk about it a lot, because the culture is different, because it is something to be shared when you have like a really great moment, a lot of them are in more recent times, but partially because I think just from the society we live in and my age, I note them now of like, that was great. Is that one of those moments that's up there?
Yeah.
So as I started this list, there were a couple of moments that were like, for sure it's on this list. And then thinking through like my whole life as a fan, it was really interesting to go back to, older times and really go like, okay, what was that moment back when I wasn't paying as much attention to? Is this one of the big ones?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. So many memories, so many choices. Let's just get right into it, Joseph, here. We're ranking our happiest Star Wars moments in real life, and we're going to begin with your number four. Five. Whoa, we're now skipping five. I saw four. Five. You're number five.
I love this. You sound like the count on Sesame Street. It's losing control, just shouting out random numbers.
Three is the counting, and the counting is three. And we're going to begin with your number five.
My number five is a more recent one. It is one that I just knew was going to be on the list because it is just one of those moments that blew me away. I think it was because I got to enjoy this thrill for myself as an individual, but surrounded by a very large crowd, and I really like enjoying things with other people. That's nice, too. My number five is captured by the simple phrase, roll it again.
Yes.
Many people will know exactly what that means, but if you don't, and for the sake of sharing fun stories, at the Star Wars Celebration in Chicago, there was that great panel that we were lucky to be able to get into, to be in that big room. It was the Rise of Skywalker panel, building up hype, and it was the reveal of the trailer, right? The reveal, the title, and that was cool. Everything was already great. This is already like, this is amazing. Right, great, right? The revelation in the trailer, the implication that Palpatine was back, right? No one's ever really gone, seen the second Death Star, and the laugh, and, hearing the burble go through, like, there's so many things going on. Like, people had been reacting audibly to every beat of the trailer and what it, confirmed or denied or revealed, everything from, shirt colors.
Right.
So many different emotions, a roller coaster, and people are like applauding for the title, and people are, you can already hear the murmur of like, was that Palpatine? Is Palpatine confirmed? Like, you could hear the burble to me of, did everybody read that the same way of they just confirmed Palpatine's back, right? And then the lights transition from the screening to this, from our perspective, tiny figure. And the lights in the stage setup are red, and you see it's Ian McDiarmid, right? And I've just always been such a huge fan of Palpatine. Don't need to go into the whys of that because we've talked about that a ton. But a part of it for me is Ian McDiarmid, of just being fascinated with his character actor, who's like, he ran a theater. He's Royal Shakespeare Company. Like, this master thespian who just kind of fell into Star Wars and is now an icon, right? And always an icon who's up for it, right? Like, interesting. Yeah, I'm never looking down my nose at this. It's great. And let me figure this out. So it was, for me, a moment of being a fan of Palpatine, but also a fan of Ian McDiarmid. And I know it's a standard kind of convention thing when you reveal a trailer like that to, you know, play it one more time. But the fact that the team, Ian McDiarmid, leaned into it by him doing the Palpatine voice, so evil, so absurd, and to say something as real world is roll it again. It's just every little thing I like about Star Wars. It felt like boiled into that moment and just an absolute highlight for me as a Star Wars fan.
It was a rock concert moment, wasn't it? It was like, what are you talking about? He's coming out to play with Slash? What?
Right? Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's not only the utter confirmation that, yeah, no, in case you didn't get that, here's Ian McDiarmid, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In the utter absurdity of the roll it again of the Emperor saying something, you know, so mundane, you know, as roll it again. Like, yeah. It's, you know, is funny as the Emperor saying, like, we will be right back after this message from our sponsors. And having just everybody go, most amazing thing I've ever heard.
Last week on Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
Look, this is an amazing moment, and I want to shout out our friend Brian Ward, who, of course, does our Forcer logos, a listener friend, and we were at this convention with for several days. He put out that shirt, the Roll It Again, in the Star Wars kind of Return of the Jedi red font, and I have that. It is one of my favorite Star Wars items ever, and it is about that moment. And you guys should search Brian's stuff on TeePublic, Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, because some of the stuff he puts out there is so great, but, you know, it gets taken down, Disney, whatever, he gets it, I get it, we all get it. We've had some shirts taken down in Force Center, a lot of them, actually. But you got to get him because he puts out some of the best stuff. And that Roll Again, I think I had added it to cart the moment he tweeted it out and was like, there, because it's just such a good moment. I got to experience with each other. And if you don't mind, I'm going to go into a little bit of my view of this and why this, I was happy for myself, but thrilled for you and a little behind the scenes story, if you don't mind.
Oh, please go for it.
You and I have similar personalities in the sense of, you know, we're going to try to get what we want in a professional way. And if something just doesn't work out, we're okay. And we'll go on. We'll figure it out. And getting press passes and stuff to conventions is sometimes easy, sometimes hard. But specifically getting into, like, press access for panels, it's a very privileged thing. We're fortunate to even touch. But sometimes it's hard. And that particular one was very hard.
Yes.
We couldn't get in, and the company I'd worked with at the time, I'd gotten in through that. So I was kind of taken care of, but it wasn't Force Center, and we couldn't get you in. And then that company wasn't being very helpful, if I'm being blunt, and we couldn't get it. And it was very frustrating. And I remember one point you said to me, because you and I were in a hotel, and you were like, hey, look, if I have to stay home or stay in the hotel room and watch it on the stream, there's no problem with that, which I believe in my heart is true from your point of view. I know you would have, but I just remember thinking, like, we're not done yet. We're not done yet. There's more of us, Poe. There's more of us. We didn't know that line yet. And our friend Dorina Arellano of the World Girls and so many other things, is so good at getting into things. Like, she's just got skills. And I remember her saying, who do we need to get in? I said, Joseph. And we're like, so you, me, and Dorina marched on over there. And this great guy named Marshall Weinbaum was handling this stuff. He works for Disney, PR, that kind of stuff. And it's not like demanding. We're not like, here's your manager. It was just like, hey, Can we make this happen? And nothing under the table, nothing like that. And
Dorina, no, I was like, here, we're doing coverage. This is what we're doing. Yeah.
And Dorina made it happen and got both of us in and everything. And I just, when that happened too, the joy, I just remember thinking, yes, we got Joseph in. And this moment made it all worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm so glad that you shared that. It is a big part of that, I could have missed Roll It Again.
Yeah. And
it's very, very lucky to see it. And yeah. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube and stuff like that, but it was great to be there in the moment.
It was a rockstar moment. And so glad knowing, you and I share love of Palpatine and McDonald, but I just know it as a special place in your heart. So great moment. Great way to start our list. See, folks, we're getting personal. We're pulling the curtains back. I'll tell you about how after that convention, I had two hot dogs and just stuffed them down with no toppings. Just me and Christian Harloff eating hot dogs, talking about Palpatine. Oh, it was a great time.
So it was a great day, a whole great day. And that was the beginning of a really great day with a lot of great people.
It was. So from there, we're going to go back a ways for my number five to start my list off. I'll read it as I wrote it in our notes here, Joseph. My parents get a tax return, so I get a Bespin guard. We are going back to, it might be, it's after Return of the Jedi. This I know. I'd already seen Jedi, and that's when I really, fell in love with Star Wars. Been familiar with it before, kind of, and, was in my parents' Volkswagen van for the screening at a drive-in, blah, blah, blah. I've told that story before, but it really set in at Return of the Jedi. And I remember this day crystal clear, as best I can, as it's a young memory, right? You start adding in things as you go along. I need a back-to-sleep pod to remember everything specifically and detailedly. But, I don't, it's an adult, my parents were like, we got money back from a tax return. I had no idea what that meant. No idea. And we were a lower middle-class family, so all I heard was, we got, extra money. That sounds good. And I grew up in the town of Rio Grande, California. A lot of people know that. I've told that before. But there's a stretch, Grand Avenue is literally the Grand Avenue through the middle of all the five cities area there. There's a Lucky grocery store. A lot of people might remember the Lucky brand. And then next to that was a Round Table Pizza, but one of the old, go in, sit down, pizza parlor kind of spots. A lot of memories there. Squished in between them for many years was a toy store. And it was a cold Central Coast beach foggy day. I remember that. And we drove over there and my parents were like, we're going to take you and your sister to this toy store and you get to pick out one item because we got a tax return.
Did they really just say straight up say like, this yes. is how taxes work, kids?
This is kind of where I first ever heard the term tax return. And then you get money back for something, but it's ours. I don't know. And again, I say the lower middle class thing just because that I grew up with a wonderful life and a privileged life indeed. But I wasn't, I had some friends. My friend Terry got every toy in the world. I had a friend named Britton who got every toy in the world. God bless that life. It was theirs to enjoy. I didn't get that. And that meant a lot. And so I went in and, it wasn't get a Star Wars toy. You could get anything, G.I. Joe, Transformers, anything. And this was the classic wall of Kenner toys. And I spent my time looking at them, measuring what I want. And for whatever reason, Han, Luke, Leia, C-3PO, Chewbacca, I got the Bespin guard. I had one toy opportunity and I got the Bespin guard. The one that is, there was a couple options. I think this was the Asian male, the mustache kind of guy. I think I remember. I don't have the packaging in front of me. And I just grabbed that guy. And I just loved that guy. And that was the guy I picked. That guy. And therefore, for the rest of that time that I had the figure, I did eventually get rid of my Kenner figures. I just had that memory was burned into my brain of you have the opportunity of Star Wars in front of you. What do you connect with? And Star Wars, you and I say, we celebrate the grizzled weirdos, the background characters. On that particular day with this opportunity in front of me, I chose one of the guys guarding Cloud City. And that meant the world to me. And it's still one of my happiest memories.
Yeah, that's such a great memory because, this is a part of the attachment to the toys is the ritual, right? Yeah. And the reason, right, that you remember that moment is because it is the shock that you're going to be able to have this agency of mm-hmm. choosing one, right?
Oh, the pressure. Yeah.
The pressure, right? Will Wheaton's got a great bit about this. I've seen him do it live. I'm sure he's got it written down somewhere about that specific, the wall of Kenner, Star Wars, and the anxiety of you can get one, but which one? I've always loved you've told a version of this story before, and I've always thought it was just so fascinating that your family has a history of security and law enforcement, and you yourself worked in security a long time. There's something about young Ken who's that guy in a pretty awesome uniform who's just, I've got the picture pulled up of the original car, just the dude there in a, pretty cool, nice cut uniform that just hands clasped, just I'm ready to take care of any problem. I'm here to serve the public.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now, and I don't know his he's just described as a white Bespin security guard. I wouldn't call that accurate here on the list I'm looking at, but my memory of the package just is not as accurate as just the figure itself. I just had that for a long time. Oh, you're so right. Yeah. Themes emerge early on.
Themes emerge. And I love that you picked the Bespin security guard because your parents got their taxes back, because it sounds like the kind of stuff that Lando was saying about Cloud City. Like, I've had tax return problems of every kind.
Yes, it did. It's very busy. It connected on some level. So that is early on in my Star Wars fandom, starting out my journey and starting out my list at number five. Joseph, what is your number four?
My number four, we are jumping to a little bit earlier in my life. I always think that one of the things about being a fan is wanting to find different ways to engage with the story of, like, how can I experience it? You know, can I get an action figure of it? Can I play it or perform it in some way? And one of those things is video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars, always video games. A lot of times I didn't have the system, or access to computers. And one of the things I always really wanted is to just, like, really feel like I am in Star Wars flying around. And eventually the Rogue Squadron game comes out for the N64. And I played that and I loved it, and it scratched a lot of that desire to be in the galaxy and to feel in command of a ship swooping around. But then the GameCube comes out, right? Mm. And it is the follow-up Rogue Squadron game that is really walking through a lot of the battles, certainly other ones, but battles from the movies, right?
Yeah.
And I bought the game before it was available, like a week or something before the actual GameCube.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Before I knew if I'd even got it. And I always remember that feeling of, like, just unbelievable amounts of fun are in this disc, but I have no way to access them. And I remember one of my friends being like, that's the first time Star Wars is on DVD in any way, because it's an actual, you know, digital format, and the movies hadn't come out on DVD yet, and it was like a big deal. So anyway, this is a time where I was like, I was living with my girlfriend, and I was trying to balance my video game obsession with having a functional life, and I often failed at that. I was enjoying this game so much, and it was you unlock the next level. Mm-hmm. And I saw that the Battle of Endor is the next thing to unlock, and I was really struggling to finish the level before it, and I deeply wanted to unlock that Battle of Endor.
Yeah.
And there was a night where a relative of my girlfriend was visiting. My girlfriend had to go do a show, and and this part of it isn't a fun memory. It's a funny memory. It's not a great memory. It's a memory to be learned from, put it that way. Yeah. I was, like, friendly about it. I was like, do you mind if I just go into the other room and play video games for just a few minutes? And I'll be right back out. And she was like, yeah, sure, fine. That's good TV out here. I'll entertain myself. Don't worry about it. Is not very friendly or very hospitable. But as I said, I was borderline, had a problem, but I went in and, like, I'm just going to play for a minute. And I beat the level, and then the Battle of Endor opened up to me. And I was like, well, I can't wait. I gotta try it once. And, you know, in modern standards, when you look back, it might not be the most amazing thing, but it was the first time on a video game that I felt like this is not like a funny, wonky, kind of you're in Star Wars, you're in Star Wars, but the characters have weird heads, or you're in Star Wars, but the mechanics, like, I felt like the dream has come true. I am in the Battle of Endor, right? The sheer volume of TIE fighters and TIE interceptors that exploded out, the dialogue from the movie, you know, and the they're Sector MV7. And I always yelled at it, like, yeah, that's means everywhere, because they're everywhere. it was just that moment of unlocking Battle of Endor in that video game, and feeling like I am truly in Star Wars. Yeah. And then I played almost all night and had to go out and say, I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry, but I unlocked the Battle of Endor, and I'm sure you can understand.
You have to understand. You have to understand. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. No, and you're so right. You're capturing the spirit of, I think, as Star Wars fans, and I think when any video game really succeeds, if it's that type of game, even a sports game or something like that, like you, when you feel you're in it, it is a weird thing. It's a magical thing that we're all kind of looking for. I always talk about how much I love MLB The Show. It's because, you know, I would have loved to have been not just a baseball player, but like a general manager of a baseball team. And I get that feeling. And so I get lost in it and I start daydreaming like, oh, I got to trade that player. Oh, that guy's. And so to have that feeling and connect with it in Star Wars, that's pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, the wish fulfillment to take down multiple Star Destroyers. Ugh, amazing.
Great, great choice. And I got to tell you, I did not have a game for you. I've never played Rogue Squadron. Never have.
Yeah, I haven't looked it up in a long time. I think at the time it was stands in the annals of video game history. But to me, in that moment, it was everything.
Everything indeed. Well, that's your number four. My number four, we're staying in the video game world. This was, again, as you and I, we are pretty personal on a lot of Force Center programming, sharing our takes and our stories and our journeys. So I know I've mentioned this one before, but I really wanted to focus on it because it's such key. It's a key moment in my Star Wars fandom. One I should have learned from sooner, but I always it's always there. So we are going to 2005 range. Late 2005, maybe early 2006, but I do remember it around that time. And this is when the 2005 version of Battlefront 2 came out. Mm. And yes, if you've listened to me before, even read some stuff before, here's the moment. And it is a moment, a specific moment, not the game overall, but a specific moment in which I was playing on the Mustafar map as a clone trooper. And the music, as I was running around, the music that was playing was Padme's Ruminations, which is... now, without a doubt, one of my favorite Star Wars tracks. Love it. And in this one particular moment, I realized, remember, this is late. The game kit was released October and into November 2005 to coincide with the Revenge of the Sith DVD release. Revenge of the Sith had been in our lives since May 2005. Prequel feelings, all those things we're kind of working through, all those things we talk about a lot here in Force Center were all in my head. And my answer was, I don't like the prequels. Oh, there's 20 things I could tell you I like about them, but I don't like them. That's my official answer. But I do love Star Wars, and I loved the first Battlefront game released in 2004. My roommates and I used to play the hell out of that game. And so the second one comes out, and it's just as fun. And this, it's got a lot of prequel stuff. It's got Megiddo, and it's got your flying ARC-170s, and there's a lot of things that are really cool about it. But this particular moment, in this living room, me and my roommates rented a house in Northridge, and it was a bachelor house, guys in their mid to late 20s. We had two chairs. from IKEA, two little IKEA square coffee tables that are $30 each. And then this couch that was like a blue suede back blue velvet couch. I don't even know how we got it, but it was there. And I was on that couch playing Battlefront 2 by myself, because a lot of times we play with friends, but I was by myself just doing a solo thing. And the moment Padme's Ruminations is playing, the dark, somber, weird, you know, wonderfully weird music that's a little different. Oh, and it's Mustafar, and I'm a clone trooper, and I thought right then, oh man, I love the prequels. And it was an awakening, and then over the years, and then, you know, later I started writing with some friends, and I put those walls up again, and look, there's a lot of things you can poke fun at, a lot of things, but Star Wars is spiritual. It is in the heart. The joy comes from there. The intellectual stuff can come later. You can always criticize and find faults and want it to be better, blah, blah, blah. But it all generates, the joy of Star Wars just generates in those little moments. And I go back to that often. I wish I could almost relive it. And I wish I was a little bit more open to it. I wish I wish you had moved out to LA then, Joseph, and you and I could have talked. And I would have been like,
played that video game.
We would have played the video game, and I would have said to you, I think I have a problem. You said, what? I think I like the prequels. and you would have helped me through that. I didn't have that. I wasn't surrounded by that. And a lot of it was, well, Battlefront 2 is good. This prequel stuff is great. It's way better than the movies. The movies are stupid. Like, that was a lot of the conversation in my friend group around that time. So to have that moment, to hear music, to a clone trooper, a setting, a world, and all of it adding up, it added up to Star Wars, a thing I loved. Great moment. I'll remember it forever. And I reference it a lot because it actually is pretty darn powerful in my Star Wars journey.
Do you feel like part of it is just like that moment in that context stripped away any of the let's debate with other people, thumbs up, thumbs down, is it good or is it bad? And it's just like the aesthetic power of it spoke to you?
Yeah, it is. And I know that what is Star Wars is this weird moving goalpost. And sometimes it's, you know, a lot of debates come up. We've even Book of Boba Fett of whether or not these multicolored bright speeders are Star Wars enough. And I think more often than not, the answer is yes. It's just something new, something strange. And it takes a while to maybe accept it. And the prequels went through that. The design aesthetic was very different. The technology was different. I think that was around it. But taking, you're exactly right, taking that all away. And my roommates and I, we're still friends, by the way. The great guy, we're still, you know, we can get a little snarky and fond. Like, that's what roommates do who know each other since high school. You're going to make your little jokes. And I think sometimes you can confuse saying wizard is a fun reference to Phantom Menace. It's not a constructive criticism. And a lot of people confuse the two, right? Like, I go wizard. Yeah, you're right. It does suck. No, I'm just going wizard because it's funny. So there's a lot of that in the house. To strip away all of it, indeed. It was, again, John Williams, some of his best work. And it was the clone troopers. Man, that looks cool. That's really cool. And then Mustafar, something I've read about and dreamed about, not calling it Mustafar, but a lava planet where this mythic fight happened. To see it all, and yeah, the raging debate pre-Twitter was gone. Friendster and MySpace, but not the same. Yes. And sitting alone, probably because I wasn't with my friends. I was just playing, probably off of work on an afternoon, and it all just added up to, oh, you're right. This is in those movies. This is there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's such a beautiful moment. I've had a few moments like that where just like, hey, wait, this thing that I've got some like, I'm not sure about that. Suddenly just like, wait, those sounds, that look, I like this. Maybe I don't actually dislike that thing. It's a beautiful moment.
Yeah. So that is my number four. We're up to your number three.
My number three is another relatively recent one, but I got to be honest, it's definitely up there with just happy Star Wars. This is several hours. Some of the moments that we're talking about are like, it's that moment. And this one's like, no, this is several hours. And I'll just say what it is up front. My number three is post The Rise of Skywalker first screening all day drinks.
Oh, I love it.
The drinks are part of it. It was really fun to go through this list and find the moments that were kind of like small and personal and the moments that were about community and connection as well. So we've talked about this before on the podcast as well. You and I saw together along with many friends and our partners, Grace and Sarah, a screening of The Rise of Skywalker, press screening in the morning at like 10 a.m.
Yeah.
At El Capitan, right? So, we have talked much about how much we liked the film. We responded to it emotionally, moved some other people who were already not happy with it. But for the most part, it was just this. I think you got that communicated to you more than I did. And I was able to just kind of stay in my little bubble of happiness. You let me know that there was already some strong opinions coming your way. But in general, that bubble of just sort of being deeply moved by it. And a bunch of us went over to the California Pizza Kitchen, fine dining establishment. And we just had a great little lunch. Now it was noon. It was like, I'm having a martini.
Yeah.
To celebrate Star Wars. And we talked about it. I remember Mark Ellis was there. And I think it was Mark who's like, what do you think? Do you think people are going to like this? We had some discussions about that, but it is a great, fun time. And then my wife, and I, after lunch happened, everybody split up, and then my wife and I just didn't feel like going home. And, so we stood around in that Hollywood and Highland Mall for a little while talking about, the movie, and they were just like, you know what? Screw it. Let's go to Musso and Frank because you don't need it's a classic Hollywood restaurant if you're not familiar with it. And you don't need, at the time, you didn't need any reservations to just go belly up to the bar and just go, you know, sit in a stool that used to be Orson Welles and talk about Star Wars. And a part of it, we've talked about it on a kind of analytical level, and there's plenty of places on the podcast to go find that. But one of the things that I was really affected by, and so was my wife, is what the film did and said about who Leia was and what her legacy was. And she's just as important as Luke. It's the Skywalker twins and how much that movie did for that. So my wife and I went to the bar and had some drinks at this great classic place, you know, I had a, I think I had a second martini. The kind of old school bartender upsold us on getting another drink. We were talking in really hushed tones, but then a person next to us was like, "Hey, I'm, you know, a part, I think it was the advertising team, that who had been contracted to help with the opening. And like, I haven't actually seen it yet, so don't spoil anything, but are you talking about Rise of Skywalker?" And like, "Yeah." And yeah. Like, "Did you like it?" And like, "We loved it." And it was a really fun and friendly conversation. Mm. It was just this bubble of, you know, sometimes when a new show comes on, there's that instinct to just go to social media immediately.
Yeah.
And this was this blissful for hours and hours and hours. I just stayed in this bubble of, you know, family and friends, mm-hmm. just loving it. And I had some good drinks too. So those several hours, just one of my happiest Star Wars memories.
And I'm honored to be a part of it. It was, yeah, you're right. We have talked a lot about it. A lot, and I won't belabor some of the points there. Yeah, but like when you say like some, you know, I told you some people were sharing their opinions. They were like yelling about it in the lobby, that kind of thing. And again, you were always saying like, "Hey, if you didn't, if the movie didn't connect with you, all those kind of things." And I mean that, and I know you mean that too. And it's like totally get it. But you know, to be blunt, like I had come out with tears in my eyes. That's where this movie moved me. I keep talking about that. I know you would been moved, and I just didn't want to have that. It just wasn't the time for me to discuss it. I needed to go be with my feelings. And you know, Mark and I, Ellis and I, you know, obviously known each other a long time. We do comedy together on the road. There's just a little shorthand. It's almost like Ocean's 11 where, you know, he'll pass me and under his breath be like, "You think it's time for lunch across the street?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's time to go. Let's do it." And it was like, "Let's go." And that was such a good, just, we were trying to be hushed as well. Who knew, we didn't know who was around us, who didn't want to be spoiled, but it was just like, It wasn't the talk about the deep themes and all the stuff was going to come and the criticisms or, you know, "Hey, more Rose Tico," all those wonderful conversation points we knew were going to come, but it's just to sit there as a Star Wars fan, enjoy a good, you know, chain restaurant pizza, a midday drink, and just be joyful about new Star Wars and what it made you feel. And that was a great moment. And yeah, almost jealous you guys got to go on. We had to go home.
Yeah, we didn't even plan it. It was so spontaneous. And that was a part of the joy of just like, we're not done being out in the world and celebrating this again. Yeah. Quietly.
Yeah.
So nobody overheard us. Yeah. And I think that's a part of it of like the, it's not that I don't ever want to hear other people's opinions. I actually really like it and I really want to know it, but just sometimes as a fan, you want to take that moment to just feel what you feel before you start making it a discourse. Yeah. And it was really nice to have that bubble of just feeling what we felt about it.
Yeah, it was a positive memory. One of my favorites, and so glad you chose it. And yeah, going to an old Hollywood bar and talking Star Wars just seems right.
Yeah, it ticks a lot of my boxes. So that's my number three.
It does. Well, my number three, we are going to another Star Wars celebration, this time 2017 in Orlando. And this is, now follow me here. The moment is winning the first ever Movie Trivia Schmodown Star Wars Championship.
Wow.
Yeah, but I'm not here to talk about the glory. I'm not going to lie. Glory's fun. We like glory. But I'm here to talk about what it meant to me in a big picture. For those who don't know, and I think most that listen know some of the stuff we do outside of this, Joseph and I compete in the Movie Trivia Schmodown, run by Christian Harloff, used to be Mark Ellis back in the day, Skybound, came out of the movie from the Schmoes No Movie Show, which I was the producer of for the year, and it's fun, and it's movie trivia, and it's gotten big, and it's gotten serious, and a large amount of just wonderful competitors joined the Star Wars ranks after this event. This was like this big special kickoff. Including Alex Damon, and people who you too, but people who I just, you know, who absolutely I know were going to be better at me than answering Star Wars trivia questions. And I wanted them to come in and show how good they were. Then again, Alex Damon, you, Laura Kelly's great, Nikki DiMalanta, Thomas Harper, Adam Witt, who I love, and, you know, Sean Sullivan, a lot of people. The Star Wars division in the Schmodown has grown. But this was the early days, and this was still where it was almost like a side little thing. We knew we were going to have this belt and we were going to this convention and a lot of people showed up and you know, Jenny Nicholson, Sam Witwer, Jeremy Johns, myself and another guy. And I don't know how to say, like, the training and studying needed for Shmodo now is on another level. It's why I just knew I couldn't keep up with it. I know, Joseph, you were great with it, but it's hard to keep up with the studying, right?
It's become so very, very intense. The competition that you're talking about is like, it's like a chef-made hamburger at a fine restaurant and McDonald's, the same thing. They're both very good, but they're not quite the same thing.
Not quite the same thing. And I was doing some study and everything, but some of the other people were my fiance, she used to work there, like making them as part of her job, train them. And they wanted to win and the passion was real. And I wanted to win too. Not gonna lie, I was training and studying. Long story short, Whitwer fumbled the ball. He messed up on a question he'd answer 999 times out of 1,000. He messed up. Captain Nita, he got eliminated, goes to sudden death and I win. That was great. But there's great joy, and I get dispelled, and there was like 500 people. And like I said, I'm not going to lie. Joseph and I love, we do a lot of things that occasionally put us in a spot where a lot of people get to show us their appreciation to us and in our face. And it's totally fun. We love that. So I'm not going to lie. That was a great feeling. And after the event, we had so many people gathering around us that the security had to come and be like, what's going on? There was a moment after all that that was so fun, and you're riding, and it's a buzz. And I was walking back, and a long walk back to a hotel in Orlando. And I was walking back, and it wasn't like tears of joy type of joy, but it was this. I was a kid who used to get beat up on a playground for wearing a Return of the Jedi shirt. I was a kid who, as he grew up, who was like, oh, you're interested in girls? You want to date girls? They're never going to date you. You love Star Wars, nerd. I was told that. I was in my early 20s. My friend's coming over. You got to get rid of the Star Wars stuff if you want anyone to love you. You got to take all this stuff down. And I just remember walking back to the hotel thinking, I just want a Star Wars trivia question contest. And people loved it. And I have a podcast about it. And I do this. And like, what a crazy, wonderful thing that I wish I could go back and tell my 10-year-old self on that playground in an elementary school in Rio Grande, California. You're getting bullied and beat up for this now. Don't worry. Stay true to yourself. And that's a lot of things in life. And if you could go back and tell your youthful self, the kid who picked the Bespin guard out of the toy store with your parents' tax return money, not only is it going to mean something to you later, it's going to be rewarding and enriching, and it's going to help you grow as a person. And we always believe in just holding on to that love. We're not here just talking about some movie series we love. We're talking about Star Wars. And as I walked back to the hotel room, all the shouting was done. All the celebrating was done. I just remember thinking, this is unbelievably amazing, and I'm so happy that as a Star Wars fan, I got to experience it.
Yeah, it is so, so great, everything you're saying about that relationship to some of the, it's cute that you like that kid, but keep it under your hat vibe that, for better or worse, we grew up with, with the way the world has changed, and that particularly with trivia, that idea of like, you could maybe skate by, you know, as you and I were becoming teens and, you know, supposed to be putting the childish things away, you could maybe skate by with like, yeah, I like Star Wars. It's pretty cool. Yeah. It'd be awesome to have a lightsaber. Boba Fett's a cool name. Yeah. You could maybe skate by with that, but you are not supposed to know that those are Corellian blood stripes on Han's pants, right?
No,
you are not supposed to know that Greedo is a Rodian. You're certainly not supposed to say that out loud. So there's like this real, like I felt a pressure to like, I can kind of acknowledge I like it. But don't tip your hand that you know too much, and to have it flip where like I used to be frightened that I would be ostracized if people found out how much I knew about Star Wars, then to play a trivia contest, like I hope people think I know enough about Star Wars, you know, direct flip is really powerful.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Great memory. And one of the things I remember too is, Alex and Molly. So that's the day around the time I first met them. And I just remember looking out in the crowd, and I say at one point, I go, there's your future champion right there. And he cleaned my clock. So it all worked out. All right. That is my number three. We are up to your number two.
All right. That's such a good one. I'm reeling thinking about it. But my number two actually does tie in a certain way, because it is about that being able to very publicly celebrate Star Wars and publicly celebrate our love of it. You and I are both performers, so any happy list of happy moments for me is always going to involve some amount of performance, probably. Yeah. And I think part of that goes to a little bit of what you were talking about of in youth, of like sort of that just general like keep everything under your hat. Be cool.
Yeah, be cool, man.
Especially, you know, I think when I was younger, like the way that it felt socially acceptable to have people, you know, applaud you and validate was like sports. And I tried and I was never great at them. And discovering performance, it was this way where I felt like this is a venue in which I can and should be loud and proud, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All the cultures I come from are very much like, let's be very polite and laid back and let's not raise our voices and let's not make things about ourselves if they're not. And performance was such this outlet because it was a structured, societally agreed upon. You are on stage. You are making a presentation. Please find a way to be, you know, this big, loud version of yourself that is also honest and is sharing what you love in a way that also brings joy to the audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just a little bit of that is just the understanding of like it is the act of getting to totally come out of any sort of shell and be your full self in front of other people. Is a big part of this memory. So I'm going back to late 90s, early 2000s. Phantom Menace is all the rage. Everybody's talking about Star Wars. This convention that I have been a part of for many years in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Convergence is just getting started. And Star Wars is everywhere. And I'm kind of hitting a stride with some other friends with the sketch comedy stuff. Mm. But even with that, the sketch comedy stuff is like, you could kind of make an offhand Star Wars joke, but a whole Star Wars sketch, you're probably going to lose the general audience.
Right.
And so going to perform at Convergence, we're like, do your sketch comedy that, you know, that everybody in this sort of social group likes, but you don't need to do bits about The Office, working at The Office, not the show The Office. Like, go as nerdy as you can. You're like, test us. Is there anything too obscure, right? And in particular, it is kind of a memory over the years. So 99, in anticipation of Phantom Menace, I wrote kind of like a trailer, a sketch that was structured as a trailer for a movie called The Power of the Funny instead of The Force. I was a huge comedy nerd, and so were all of my friends. And it was, I don't entirely agree with this now, it was definitely my perspective then, but it was sort of structured that like kind of lazy stand-up where you just make sex jokes and dick jokes, that's the dark side.
Right.
And, you know, kind of more old school vaudeville physical comedy, that's the light side. so that's the way the whole trailer was structured. And it was, I wrote and I played Luke, and it was about, you know, Luke's journey to try to understand the power of the funny. And one of my favorite things was that, you know, my brother on my back, he was playing Yoda, and, you know, I was being Luke and carrying him and, you know, playing it really seriously and saying, but Master Yoda, are dick and butt jokes more powerful? And that gets a nice laugh. And my brother doing, you know, good Yoda impression saying, no, quicker, easier, more seductive. And that kind of the whole thing's framed around that. And it, you know, it goes great. It's exactly kind of what you're describing of feeling like I can take this part of myself that I used to need to keep under a hat and just really celebrate it. And then that became the specific Power of the Funny became a tradition for Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. Yeah. And had moments in both of those sketches that I just loved doing. You know, I got to pretend to be Obi-Wan, and that was so much fun. You know, poking fun at some of the weird things of Attack of the Clones. But I remember one of my friends going, hey, I love that sketch because it pointed out everything that didn't work about Attack of the Clones. And even back then, I was like, yeah. And I wrote that as somebody who actually likes the movie. That was a happy memory. And then final thing for this, you know, it was weird to go on this journey. And I actually grew obviously a lot as a human and a performer over the 6 years it took us to do all three of these at the convention. But 2005 comes out and, you know, Revenge of the Sith has lots of great moments that are fun to put in this sort of parody structure. And one of the things we did with this sketch as well is that the lightsabers were, you know, like old school rubber chickens that we did choreographed fights with. So we're doing Revenge of the Sith, and my brother and I are, I'm playing Obi-Wan, my brother is playing Anakin, and we're doing the rubber chicken choreographed lightsaber fight. And a bit that worked really well because we had similar sensibilities, similar kind of appearance and timing of, we did the moment where Obi-Wan and Anakin both reach their hands out to use the Force and to give the push, and they're locked, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we do the hand, and then we both at the exact same time drop the rubber chicken out of the other hand and then raise the other hand. So we're still locked. And then we had the balance at the time to both raise a leg. So we had like three limbs up trying to do the big Force push, and got big, nice laugh. And then both lovers of physical comedy and abusers of our bodies at that time, then pushed ourselves as hard as possible to go flying. And great response, and just a great memory of a way to take a love of Star Wars and kind of translate it into a different part of my life.
Beautiful. I'll just sit back taking in this story. I would have loved to have seen it. See, I wish this is, if you had done the show in LA, I would have been like, there's a path in front of me of what to do. And you're right. I think I mentioned before, but I did a very nerdy Star Wars related sketch of the Groundlings while I was training over there. And my director's like, that's funny, but it's just never going to play in a show. People aren't going to get it. I'm like, people get it. People get it. So for you to experience that on that level, and just a great concept too. Now, are these on video? We got to release these special edition.
I'll have to, I think I can maybe, we'll dig. I'll see if I can find it.
That's great. That's great. That's just a great memory. Yeah, and I know what you mean. Just taking something from your past and just being able to explore it and celebrate it now. It means a lot. It means the world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's my number two.
Great number two. Mine is my number two, pretty simple and direct here. Pretty recent, 2020. In fact, the week of the pandemic lockdown, it was a weird time. I got to go. A friend took a planned trip, which is why we ended up doing this. The week when everything was kind of going crazy and professional sports were shutting down and we weren't even sure if we should be there. We went to Galaxy's Edge. And my number two moment is seeing the Falcon, the Millennium Falcon at Galaxy's Edge, and actually crying whenever I never thought I would. I love going to Disneyland and theme parks, so that's not the issue. But I just didn't think I was going to get to Galaxy's Edge, costs, travel, whatever. And this is without even a pandemic looming over everything. But a friend of mine just said, hey, we're going to take you and Grace. We'll treat you. It'll be a gift for me and my wife. And so we had a hotel room. Grace and I were down there. And so it's one of those things. And we said, let's just go. Looking back, I don't know if we would have now, the way things were going, the information was coming out in a weird fashion. But it ended up being, I've been in California for 24 years now, the rainiest, most consistent rain I've ever dealt with. Started raining at 8:30 in the morning, did not end till about 6 p.m., soaked, shaking. We left, it was just crazy. But one of the first things we did, before the rain fell, by the way, we hit the park, 8 a.m., and by this point, I've seen the pictures. I've had some friends who have gone. I've seen the press stuff. I've seen the Millennium Falcon. Again, that story was told of the version that you could step on at celebrations. Like, what? Nothing was going to get me. Yeah, I love Star Wars. Yeah, I cry over Star Wars. Yeah, I'm moved by Star Wars. But I've been to Disneyland before. What are you talking about? And we walk in. I think even you had been by this point, Joseph. I think you had gone before. And you had kind of prepped me and Alex Backus, Black Shows Rebels, has gone a couple times with Steve Ellis. They had told me, oh, gosh, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I did it, man. I walked up. I came around the corner. The Falcon's there. You're in this world. I remember getting kind of I posted it on Instagram, but it was kind of like a bad picture. It wasn't framed right. It was just like, I was moved. It wasn't like a bawling, shaking, sobbing, but it was like eyes watered. Again, I don't want to reiterating kind of the same point of like, but you're going back to as a kid, you're going back and they've done such a good job. And if you're out there listening, have not had a chance to go, I hope you're all fortunate enough to just be able to get to either one of the locations and experience it one day, because it was everything. And despite, and I'm not saying I approached it cynically, I just approached it of like, yeah, I get it. They built a Falcon. Got it. And I get there and you're like, that's the Falcon. And everything about Star Wars, everything that you connect to it, I just felt it in that moment and was moved. And I'll cherish that little second, that split second of my breath has been taken away because of Star Wars. I'll cherish it forever.
For you, was it the power that it felt real? Like, like I was talking about with the playing the Battle of Endor video game, that I felt like I kind of got to step into the world. Is that what it felt like to you? Like that it's almost real?
Yeah, because they sell that as Galaxy's Edge. And look, again, it's Disneyland. I just paid $25 for parking. I walked over from my hotel room. I get it. I get it.
You weren't confused about where you were.
Yeah. But Disneyland, I don't know. I bet, well, in Orlando, they bought the whole damn city around Disneyland. But in Anaheim, they control the airspace. Like, planes and helicopters don't go over Disneyland. Like, you don't go in there, unless you need to. So it's like you're easily transported away. I get that. But, like, everything about it, the rock formation, everything, which by I could see the rock formation from my grandparents' house, like 100% knew where I was. But like, yeah, everything they say it is, if we want to transport you away into Star Wars and with the characters walking around. Like, I remember one of the first things when I kind of came out of that, like, whoa, kind of haze, and we're going to go on the ride, I wanted to find a cast member to interact with. And I wanted to play. And there was someone around, but he was helping someone else. But I wanted to be like, Bright Suns, how are you? Is the ship taken? Like, I just wanted to, I felt it. And yeah, that magic of the video game feeling, it does work. And again, even though it's, you get a bathroom sign you're looking for and all those kind of things, like, you know, they succeeded. I'm always going to say they've succeeded in making Galaxy's Edge magical.
Yeah, absolutely. Just that scale of the Falcon, I mean, it just really feels like you're looking up at it and some stormtrooper bolt could come sizzling by you and you got to run onto it to get out of there. It's just, it makes you feel it.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Love it. Yeah. So anyways, I don't have much to add to it. I can't wait to get back because we went in to ride the Falcon and drops of rain were falling. And I love the rain. I'm a rainy day kind of guy, but it came out. I'm torrential downpour for 9 hours, even after we left the park. And cause they announced while we were there, they're like, we're shutting down Disneyland on Saturday. This pandemic thing's going to be, it's looked like it's a problem. And I just remember we did Rise of Resistance, all the stuff, which was amazing. And it was still raining. And so I got to experience Falcon in the rain. I want Falcon in the sun.
Yeah, you've experienced the L.A. film noir Falcon. Yeah. Now you need to see the bright, sunny L.A. Falcon.
Love it. So that is my number two, the magic of Galaxy's Edge, the Falcon making me cry, even though I thought, cynical Ken's going to return and he's not going to cry. We are going to take a quick break on this Star Wars rant. Going to come back with some honorable mentions that I swear we're going to cover in less than an hour, the honorable mentions themselves, and we're going to continue with our favorite, our happiest Star Wars moments in real life right here on Star Wars Ranked.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. We're back here on Star Wars Rank. Joseph Scrimshaw and myself are going through our own memories, our happiest Star Wars moments in real life. Hope you're all enjoying the ride, and I hope you have moments, too, that connect with ours or are completely unique to you. And we'll tell you at the end of the show where you can share them if you want to let the world know and let us know. Some honorable mentions here. Joseph, I'm going to roll through mine here and then just kind of kick it to you here. Some of this one I've talked before here, Chicago Celebration, the day after the Roll It Again panel, being on the floor. I think I was, I don't know why, you either were off going, getting toys or a hot dog or a beer, or I was just in the center of the convention floor where they shot the Star Wars show stuff and the trailer, and it's, but there's thousands and thousands of people, and the trailer comes on and everyone stopped and everyone looked up, and all the debate that had already sprung up was gone, and everyone was watching this thing, cheering, and I, again, Ken cries. I started to cry, not even because of the trailer, but just like that feeling, oh my gosh, we're Star Wars fans, and it was just a great moment. So I don't even know where you were, because we were traveling back and forth at the convention at the same time in the same cab, so I don't know.
I think two of your three options, I was either getting a beer or an action figure.
that's probably right. That's probably right. Other one for me, it's similar to what you're talking about with your comedy experience, but anytime one of my Star Wars jokes hits in a comedy crowd that's not built for nerd jokes, there's different kinds of comedy shows to attend in and around LA, but even around the world. And I'm not even talking about the ones I do now. I do a lot of Star Wars humor with my stuff when I'm going around with Alice and everything. But back in like the mid 2000s, I had a couple Star Wars jokes. I don't use them anymore. One's based around Nine Numb, which is why I have a lot of Nine Numb figures because I just owe a lot of laughs to Nine Numb. you would never know. I would tell this joke and the punchline would get, huh? Silence or applause, or more often than not, silence and three people clapping like I just connected with them on a level they never imagined.
Which then the whole audience turns around to them like, why are you so into this? Which
yes.
is always fun.
Because it wasn't just Star Wars. It was a specific reference to number one, Nine Numb, the co-pilot of the Millennium Falcon, Return of the Jedi, and one of the moments of the Falcon and the X-Wing swooping into the Death Star, it was part of the joke and part of the setup instead of part of the payoff. So anytime it would hit, it was an early version of that, like, oh, there's Star Wars fans out there. I've been told there isn't, even though it's the most popular thing in the world. I've been told there isn't. And so I love those moments as well.
Yeah, absolutely great.
Other one for me is buying the Black Series Jabba the Hutt, which was the Comic-Con exclusive from my friend Christina at the Halo 13 store at the mall I worked in as a security director. $100 cash. She went down, and even though I was heading down to Comic-Cons because I was covering them or shooting video, like, you just don't get to experience it in the way where you can wait in line for the exclusives. And she's like, I'll do it for you. So I paid her when she got the figure, $100 cash. And that was the real reason was it was for Jedi Alliance, and Maude and I, and along with other people at the time, and I know when you were hosting with Mark and John, like, you brought your toys in and you put it down and you displayed them. And I specifically was so excited. I mean, I think I even texted Maude, like, I've got a Jabba the Hutt for the set. I got a Jabba the Hutt. And again, it was just hilarious. The idea of hosting a Star Wars show on YouTube just was insane to me, and still is, kind of, when you pull back, it's just like, wow, that's what a thing. That's so awesome. And it was great. It was just a moment of like, this is a lot of money for me, but I need it.
That is such a great one. And that Jabba is great.
It's good. Naming my first car, the Millennium Fairmont. You and I have talked about, we both own 1981-ish, 80-81 Ford Fairmonts as our first car, proving we should have been friends a long time ago. But there was a moment when I got this car in high school. This car's already old. It looks old. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to name this car the Millennium Fairmont. And it's just assuring that I would not have a social life at the time. I didn't paint it on the car or anything, but it was just like this decision I made. And it was fun. It was cheeky. It was a little play on words, but it was also me. It was Han Solo and my Millennium Fairmont. So I remember that moment. Telling my friend, you know what I'm going to call this? The Millennium Fairmont.
Yeah, and the lights in the back had a Falcon vibe.
They really did. A couple more for me here. The moment the Lucasfilm sale broke on social media. We are going to discuss this probably later this year because this is the anniversary year of that, which is crazy to think. But this was another one of those day job memories. I'm in a suit and tie in my public safety office. Was at this time producing stuff, starting to produce for Shmo's No Podcast, and stuff started coming across. And I remember I was on my computer looking at Twitter on my desktop, saw the first couple tweets, and it's like my brain imploded. I could not, what was I reading? What was I reading? And then once it dawned on me and I'm seeing all the tweets and the hashtags come across, I can't describe the wave of excitement. I was shaking. Yeah. I was shaking. And my boss came in. He was a retired police officer, but he was an actor too. And he's kind of he's an old school Star Wars fan. He came in. He's like, what, Ken, what's going on? I'm like, is there something wrong? Is there a safety issue? Like, no, there's a Lucasfilm stole, there's going to be more Star Wars films. Like, so great. Yeah. Great moment.
The enormity of that compared to Lucas's, like, I did it. I'm done. I'm doing these Clone Wars things. But other than that, forget about it. To that.
Yeah.
Incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Final one for me. I swear it to be true. back in about 80, 81, I was still living in Orange County. So I'm less than 5, 6, you know, so my memory is so foggy. But I owe this a lot. A family friend was at some party. They lived around the corner from us in the city of Orange, not too far from the Orange Circle, if anyone knows where that is. And they were like friends, my parents' friends. And I was always a quiet, shy kid, and there was a party, maybe a birthday party. I don't know. A lot of kids, a lot of screaming, a lot of shouting. And I just was hanging out in the living room by myself, and I think my dad kind of came in. I said, Kenny, what are you doing in here? And my dad's quiet and shy too, so he sat down. And then the guy who it was a husband and wife, and I always, he looked like John Lennon. He was a big John Lennon fan. And the day John Lennon was assassinated, I remember him showing up at my parents' door crying. Like, that's a faint, weird memory I have. He goes, you could see I was kind of lonely. He goes, you want to see my Star Wars figures? I was like, yeah. So he went upstairs and came down with the classic Vader and 3PO Kenner display cases and storage cases and just kind of showed me. And my dad was, you know, I remember my dad like asking questions and he was pulling each one of them out. This is, you know, and I don't remember the details, but this is C-3PO and this is Luke Skywalker. And I thought Battlestar Galactica with Lorne Greene was Star Wars. I thought Buck Rogers was Star Wars. I don't know. I thought it was all the same. But I just remember that sitting there and someone was showing me Star Wars and it was seeping in whether I knew it or not.
That's like your original version of Star Wars Explained. Due respect to Alex and Molly Damon, their wonderful, wonderful channel. That's just so great. A kindly person going, let me take you on a tour of Star Wars.
Yeah. So there's all mine. I wanted to run through it here, Joseph. What are some of your honorable mentions?
Yeah, I'll run through as well. This isn't a specific thing. It is just there are many moments, too many different little ones that I also just I always want to reflect how lucky I feel to be doing the Force Center podcast. And in particular, we talk about a lot that we want to be positive. We want to be critical but still be, you know, thoughtful and positive and kind, even if there's something that doesn't work for us in Star Wars. And, you know, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. Every once in a while, we get a message from a listener. We often get very kind messages from listeners. Yeah. But every once in a while, we get one that just kind of, because my own life hits me in a specific way of how it helped a certain person, or they're having a hard time finding a podcast that celebrated Star Wars, or it really helped them through a rough time, or they're listening to it in a cool, faraway place. Getting those kind responses that people are enjoying what we do that's always one of my happiest Star Wars moments in real life.
Second that, I mean, you know, some of the connections made, I talked about my passing of a friend of the show, Zachary Bassinger, a couple weeks ago and the connections and all that comes from us. We love it. We love it. This is just, we're not even in the same room anymore. We're in our own houses recording via technology, Zencaster. So we truthfully, honestly don't know who's listening sometimes, and to get those connections, it does mean the world.
Yeah, it's a great Star Wars moment every time. A couple other ones. The beginning, early parts of this adventure of talking Star Wars with you, I was going through my Jedi Alliance memories of you had that YouTube show with Mod Garrett, and there's a lot of different ones, but the one that was just like absolutely popped to my mind is I believe it was a May 4th like supersized special.
Yeah.
And it was like, you had invited me on and a bunch of other people. And was like, let's just have fun with Star Wars. And I believe it was the day that I met Jennifer Landa.
Yeah.
And Mark Ellis, two people I consider great friends, great people. It's amazing that I met them on the same day. And then I also have a special memory of you ran a little trivia contest. And this is before I ever got even close involved into Schmodown. And I don't obsess on trivia. I like knowing things for myself.
Yeah.
But I realized that, you know, I knew, you know, I knew quite a lot about Star Wars just because I love Star Wars, and I did. But I remember being surprised by my own intensity. We didn't have any buzzers or anything. So if I'm remembering this correctly, you just had to say our last name.
Yes, that's right.
So to obsessively, I realized how intensely I was saying Scrimshaw. And you have such a wonderful sports background, and you had it structured in some sort of like tier way that I honestly didn't understand.
I
had scored enough points that I was like safe to go on to the next round, and I didn't need to answer. And I kept forgetting, and you'd ask a question, and I go, Scrimshaw. And you'd very nicely say, you don't need to answer any more questions. You're safe for the next tier.
I have to go back and watch that. I don't watch a lot of those old ones. That's hilarious. Great Bubba. Everything. Yeah. Working with Mod Ellis, Frankie Kazarian coming in, and yeah, Jennifer Landa. I remember recruiting Jennifer, maybe to come host the show after Mod had left to move on to Collider Jedi Council. And, did not. Jennifer showed up pregnant and was like, probably couldn't do a weekly Star Wars show right now, but I'll be a guest. And it was great. Yeah. Love those early days.
Yeah. Absolutely great memories. Another one that's just kind of like the whole day and the buildup. And it is something that is a community happy memory, but a weird everybody in their own corner community happy memory. And that is the first night of The Mandalorian, right?
Oh,
That sense of something brand new, everybody fussing with their technology to get Disney Plus to work at all, the buildup of it. I had, got a Mandalorian Black Series figure that I was lucky to find, and I think I took an hour long photo shoot on my balcony with the Mandalorian in the sun. And just that that sense of everybody is far apart, but so many fans are all together going on this ride. So that night, that day and that night is a real happy memory.
I second that one because it was so, even like Book of Boba Fett, Mando season 2, excitement's there, 100% there, but it was unreal for Mandalorian because it was also Disney. What's Disney? We got Disney. How does this work? What's going on?
Yeah. Live action Star Wars television, right? Yeah. I mean, it was a big deal in the beginning of something new, and I will treasure that beginning night. Mm-hmm. Two more for me. One with Galaxy's Edge. That whole day, my wife and I think spent like 10 straight hours, no other part of Disneyland, just staying in Star Wars, many individual memories, but building the lightsaber, that was another one of those moments where I felt like, I have managed to kind of enter the world. And my wife was so supportive, taking pictures of the process. And then once I had the lightsaber, taking a lot of pictures at Galaxy's Edge. A lot. And there's one that I like in particular where, like, okay, I know people are going to look at me weird, but fine. I wanted to do the pose from like the original poster and Return of the Jedi of like holding the lightsaber up to the sky. Mm. And my wife got a really great picture of it. And there's one person walking by who's just turning around like, what is he doing?
It's hilarious. It's Galaxy's Edge. What do you expect? What do you think he's doing?
Yeah, but even at Galaxy's Edge, different people have a different opinion when I post that of like that she is looking at me like, what the hell are you doing? Or she's looking at me like, that's so cool. never know.
Yeah.
We'll never know. Final one for me on the runner-ups list. Another kind of performance memory. In 2015, the weekend that the action figures came out for The Force Awakens, I was on tour on the East Coast with the Double Clicks, great musical comedy group, and Molly Lewis, another musical comedy performer, good friends, absolutely wonderful people, great tour, loved it. But there's this, and for my part of that show that we were doing, my 20-minute set was Star Wars and social justice. So it was Star Wars jokes every night. It was Star Wars all the time. Great time. And it went really well. Very happy with it. But there was this, like, I would normally be going to every Target. and I kind of can't. And we rolled up to our hotel running late for one of the gigs. And right across the hotel was a Toys R Us. Mm. And I had that. And we were running late to the gig. So we had to check in and we had like 20 minutes. Yeah. And I had that like shower and eat or action figure. And I was like, I got to do it. And I raced over there. I got a Kylo. And then told my friends about it. And they thought it was great and funny. And Molly Lewis kept introducing my set with that of like, just in case you think he's not into Star Wars, he skipped a shower to get an action figure.
As you should, sir, as you should.
that's my runner-up list.
That is great. Oh, this has been so much fun. I hope you're all enjoying our happiest moments in real life. We'll tell you where you can share yours because we do love hearing them. All right, we've reached our number one moments, our happiest Star Wars moments in real life. I'll go with my number one here. And I gotta tell you, I was racking the brain. I was like, there's a lot of things. Like, I mean, quite frankly, getting a Bespin guard, that's pretty damn high. I was even thinking this faint, foggy memory of the family friend showing me the Star Wars figures. Like, that's pretty high. It's pretty important to the list. But all that, and you and I have we've touched upon it. It's a big theme for us because we came from that era and we celebrate everyone and their entry points into Star Wars. And there's a lot of different eras and ways to discover Star Wars, but we came from that 70s into 80s era. And so it sometimes feels a little extra special to finally feel like you're home. And a lot of people out there in a lot of different ways in life can sometimes feel like you're finally seen or finally can connect with others like you or shared experiences. That's pretty powerful, even outside of Star Wars. And to just talk about something silly like Star Wars, it does mean a lot too. And I decided to go with Star Wars Celebration Anaheim 2015. It was my first celebration. Been to conventions before. In fact, I was coming back from Vegas from a pro wrestling thing I used to attend every year, the Cauliflower Alley Club. Watched the Chewie We're Home trailer at the Prim gas stations in the Vegas, Nevada, California border. And raced home. And then the next morning packed up and went to Star Wars Celebration Anaheim. And the first day had already happened. So again, I'd been to conventions in the last couple of years and they've been a lot of fun. And, but I walked around and I wasn't doing a lot of panels and, you know, Force Center was, Force Center had not even begun yet. It was later that year we started and, Jedi Alliance and all that kind of stuff. But it was like, it was a different experience. And I bought the visual, the complete Star Wars visual dictionary. I bought that one that was on sale. But you got a copy of New Dawn. No, that was Comic-Con, but I've got some other, maybe it was Lords of the Sith or something like that. Bag of goodies, all that kind of thing. And I couldn't describe the feeling. And I went back, walked down to my hotel room and set all the stuff on the bed, like, you know, your spoils of war, so to speak. I was in my hotel room and, you know, I had the lanyard, all those things. And I just was looking and I was nervously like pacing, smiling, shaking, texting people. And I sat down I was doing back then Spotlight Star Wars on Knapsack Files. It was the precursor to moving it over to Force Center with you and Jennifer. And I recorded, and I hate listening to old episodes, but if you ever all stumble on it, it just, you know, the technology, the old mics, I used to have everything, and I just don't like listening to stuff I used to do. But I just sat down to record because I couldn't capture what I was feeling. I couldn't understand it, especially at 2015, you know, this like, and I hadn't even left the day job yet. I hadn't gone to Screen Junkie, so I was in another world. And it really was that. It was Chewie, we're home. It was an unmistakable feeling of I was surrounded by Star Wars fans after spending so many years thinking I was on an island or a sparsely populated island. And we always talk about that. I always talk about the unique shared journey. But that means like, oh, I love Wedge, and I love Wedge when he says Locke has foils and attack positions, and I'm the only one, right? No, there's thousands, maybe even millions. You just weren't connected. And it's still, even in this day and age, it could sometimes surprise you. And I just recorded an episode of how just the feelings I was going through and still couldn't even put it into words. I still kind of can't. Just standing in the hotel room in a Star Wars t-shirt, waiting to go back to the floor, waiting to go talk with friends, waiting to talk about Star Wars, being surrounded by Star Wars, quite frankly, for the first time in my life. And that was a great feeling. And that's my happiest moment of Star Wars in real life.
Oh, yeah. Ken, we're home. That's a great emotion.
Ken, we're home. So that is my number one, sir. That is my number one.
Excellent. Excellent.
And that means we are with your number one.
My number one, man, very difficult to decide. This entire list could be action figures. Being at a celebration with a beer in hand, looking for action figures, that's a big one. But I kind of had to go back to like an absolute classic fundamental one for me because it's about action figures. It's about the character of Luke Skywalker. But more importantly, it's about hope. One of the big themes in Star Wars. So it's kind of two twin memories. Go back to 1983. My brother's 3 years older. He was a real realist. We knew the Return of the Jedi action figures were coming out. We'd seen them in catalogs, probably on commercials. But at the time, we lived in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is an hour drive from Minneapolis. And at the time, St. Cloud was a much smaller town and there weren't many places to find action figures and certainly not new ones. So almost every weekend, We would drive the hour into Minneapolis to kind of do like shopping, practical stuff and fun stuff. I assume my parents got practical things. For me, it was all fun. This one weekend in 1983, before the film came out, for whatever reason, my brother wasn't coming along. And I said to him, like, okay, well, we're going to stop at all these big city stores and they might have Return of the Jedi action figures. So if they do, who do you want? And he's like, I got to be realistic with you. It's too early. You are not going to find those action figures. Don't get your hopes up. And I was like, okay, but if they do, and he's like, the pig. I want the pig guard. I want the Gamorrean guard. So I was like, all right. You know, my brother, my older brother's, you know, he's almost always right. He helps me with the, you know, being realistic about life. It's not going to happen. So we go into Sears at the time and he's like, well, just going to check. And it's honestly, it's probably just going to be, you know, what I'm used to, which is a lot of Lobots alone on the hangar. And I turn the corner and it's the explosion of all of those new figures, you know, and my eyes just start darting. And selfishly, I darted first for what I wanted, which is, you know, Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker. Amazing action figure, cool action figure. If you're old enough to kind of go on the journey between Empire and Jedi, it's not just the action figure. It's that Empire and Star Wars, Luke wants to be a Jedi Knight. And everybody's like, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. Doesn't go great for him in Empire. The movie hasn't, I haven't even seen the movie yet, but he did it. He's a Jedi Knight and it's the coolest action figure I've ever seen. Yeah. It's got his lightsaber is the correct color. Right. It's green. So I was overjoyed to find this action figure. Also had a Gamorrean guard, just one of the best memories that I have as a Star Wars fan. Yeah. And then kind of the twin memory that goes along with that is, you know, that day in 2012 where it was announced that Star Wars was sold, original trilogy is coming, most likely the original big three returning. My big emotional reaction is there's going to be a new Luke Skywalker action figure and I'm maybe going to have a moment like I did in 1983. Yes. What is that action figure going to look like? And then Force Awakens comes out. They don't make the action figure. I'm waiting for that moment. You know, it's such a different lifetime. I'm so lucky to have my wonderful wife. She knows his story. She's all on board with this. So every Target we're going to around this time after the action figures are supposed to have dropped, you know, we check. And one time we turn the corner and it's just like being transported in time, but new and different because my wife is there. I turn the corner and there's old man Luke Skywalker, a great action figure in my opinion, and able to celebrate it with my wife. She knew how much it meant to me, took photos of me cradling old man Luke Skywalker. And Luke is right here next to me on my desk always when we record Star Wars, that action figure. So those are my twin moments that combine to be my happiest real life moment in Star Wars is finding Luke.
It's the poetry of Star Wars. And don't you wish you could go back in time and just tell your brother toy collecting is built on hope.
Exactly. Don't you understand? Collecting is built on hope. Turn that corner. It might be there.
It's so beautiful. And yes, the spoiler of the day was back in the day was Luke Skywalker, a Jedi Knight in figure form. That's how a lot of people learn. I love it. I truly do love it. Poetry of Star Wars, poetry of Star Wars fandom. Thank you, Joseph, for sharing all your very personal memories here.
You too.
A lot of stuff. We hope you enjoyed the journey as well. As we've been saying, if you want to share your own, we really love the interaction. You can go on Twitter at Force Center Pod, use the hashtag Star Wars Ranked, share a story, a photo, something you experienced along the way. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. You can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Get some merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter Podcast, available in a lot of different spots, including Acast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and the rest. Just search. If we're not there, let us know. We'll try to get on that spot. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We had a show running for a little while there on a companion app called Data McDive, exclusive show. You can check out those episodes. In fact, I don't know, when we're recording this, we still might be doing it. I can't remember when we're releasing this episode. So look for that. I will always tweet out how to find that. Like I said, support us on Patreon. Just follow me at Ken Napsok or go to kennapsok.com for more. Joseph, where can they follow you?
Yeah, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, at Joseph Scrimshaw, and my website is josephscrimshaw.com.
There you go. That is all. So for all of you Star Wars fans out there, we hope you have happy moments in your past, your present, and your future of love in Star Wars. That's it for this week. Star Wars has been ranked.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.